What did Jesus teach about his second coming?
Welcome to The Good Word.
I'm your host, Alden Thompson, professor in the School of Theology at Walla Walla University. My conversation partners for this last lesson in this quarter are, again, Paul Dibdall and Dave Thomas, also from the School of Theology. Let's focus in on the second coming. And the question that I asked, what did Jesus teach about his second coming? Now, it's pretty important throughout the New Testament, but let's focus on Jesus. If we say, what did Jesus teach in the Gospels about the second coming, where would you start?
Well, when you ask that question, Alden, my mind immediately goes to John 14, the first three verses, because this is probably the clearest and most, can I use the word, blatant comment by Jesus, saying that he is going away to prepare a place for his disciples, and he is going to come again. And so here you have the word, the promise of a trustworthy person. And in my own opinion, there are few things more reliable than that in life, the promise of a trustworthy person. And so, you know, I think that anybody who has thought about this faces the reality that Jesus said, I am going to come again.
And we could add to this, Acts, when Jesus was leaving, what did the heavenly messenger say to the disciples?
Or in Acts 1,
the same Jesus who was taken up into heaven will return in like manner is the way some translations read.
As you have seen him go into heaven.
As you have seen him go into heaven, he'll return in a similar way.
Now, again, in modern age, nobody's ever seen this happening, so your thoroughgoing secularists have a hard time with that, but there are just all kinds of things that we can't understand. And the picture of the New Testament is quite clear. Jesus was taken up from them, and he will come again in like manner. So John 14, do you have that? And can you read that for us, sir?
Oh, I had it a minute ago. Yeah. And this is from a more modern translation. Do not be worried and upset, Jesus told them. Believe in God and believe also in me. There are many rooms in my Father's house, and I am going to prepare a place for you. I would not tell you this if it were not so. And after I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to myself so that you will be where I am. You know the way that leads to the place where I am going.
All right. It's clearly something that's going to come. Now, where else would you go if you were going to, in the teachings of Jesus, where else would you go to find out about his teachings on the second coming?
Last part of Matthew, there's a couple of chapters near the end of that gospel. Where Jesus talks about signs of the end of the age. The Son of Man will appear in the sky. This second coming language. Matthew chapters 24 and 25 deal with that. So that's another extended portion that I think deals with his return.
Now, sometimes Christians have taken Matthew 24, the signs of the end, and have made charts and, you know, the earthquakes are getting worse, wars are getting worse, and so on. I had a teacher when I was in college back in the 60s, J. Paul Grove, who said, you can chart all you want, doesn't tell you when it's going to come. And if you look at the composition of Matthew 24, 25, and that might be a good idea for us simply to take a look at those two chapters, it's the first part of Matthew 24 simply goes through and talks about signs. And then after the signs, it shifts gears significantly and talks about surprises. So
what do you mean by surprises? Or do you want to go there yet?
Let's go 36. Okay. And you have all the signs of wars and rumors and wars and all the nasty stuff happening. But about that day and hour, no one knows, neither the angels of heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. For as the days of Noah were, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing until the flood came and swept them away. So too will be the coming of the Son of Man. Now, if we were to read that literally and take it literally, what does that mean conditions on earth are going to be when Jesus comes? In great turmoil or life as usual?
Well, the answer would be both.
Yeah, if you want to just start with these verses, then it sounds like life as usual. But we've read earlier in this same chapter about the increase of various kinds of calamities and so forth. So,
and what about Jesus' words about a time of trouble such as never was?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that needs to be thrown in here somewhere.
But the picture is one of surprise, and I know I didn't come up with this, but I heard someone once speak about the second coming, and the illustration they used was a pregnant woman. You know that the time is approaching, and you can have a pretty good idea even of when it likely will happen, but still, when the first contractions really hit, you find yourself still surprised, and in the meantime, life has to go on as well. So it's I would agree, Dave, that somehow it's both.
If you take Matthew 24 towards the end, and some of these passages are taken by our dispensationalist friends as indicating a great gap. One will be taken, one left, and so on, describing the time after the rapture or at the time of the rapture. But when you look at verse 42 and 40 through 44, keep awake, therefore, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming.
Mm-hmm.
But understand this, if the owner of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an unexpected hour.
Mm-hmm.
And see, I think these tensions that we're talking about here produce two phenomena that I think should be avoided. The one is called eschatomania. Eschatomania meaning a mania about the second advent, that's all people talk about, and they're always frantic about it. The other one is scatophobia, is a fear of the whole subject where you avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that we have a hard time balancing tensions,
mm-hmm.
the almost but not quite. yes, there are things that are identifiable, but the actual time is a surprise. These things, we in the Western world don't like those.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope we avoid the wolf syndrome where everybody's screaming, oh, this is it, this is it, this is it. And other people who are saying, ah, it's all a bunch of nonsense anyway, is that I think the word of Jesus is very clear that he's going to come again, but it's also very clear. In fact, you have a C.S. Lewis quote that you sometimes quote, Olin. Can you come up with that?
Yeah, I just happen to have that one here in front of me. Well, there are two quotes. It's in his essay, The World's Last Night, in which he talks about the importance of not knowing because you have to be ready at all times. So there are two quotes. I'll just give those to you because they're such wonderful reflections, I think, of New Testament truth. First one is, he says, we must never speak to simple, excitable people about the day without emphasizing again and again the utter impossibility of prediction. We must try to show them that the impossibility is an essential part of the doctrine. If you do not believe our Lord's words, why do you believe in his return at all? And if you do believe them, must you not put away from you utterly and forever any hope of dating that return? His teaching on the subject quite clearly consisted of three propositions. One, that he will certainly return. Two, that we cannot possibly find out when. Three, that therefore we must always be ready for him.
Hmm.
Then the other one, and this is the role of fear, and it speaks about here the, what did you call that? The
eschatomania.
Yeah, and then what's the other one?
Eschatophobia.
Eschatophobia. Boy, you've been working on your dictionary too much, Dave.
No, those are theological terms.
Oh, you know, theological
having
terms.
To do eschatology is the doctrine of last things, so eschatophobia and eschatomania, the words make sense if you think about it.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, this is where he talks about the fear factor, and it's a wonderful quote. Perfect love, we know, casts out fear, but so do several other things. Ignorance, alcohol, passion, presumption, and stupidity. It is very desirable that we should all advance to that perfection of love in which we shall fear no longer. But it is very undesirable until we have reached that stage that we should allow any inferior agent to cast out our fear. So constant preparedness. Now, there's, I don't know whether you guys remember this, but there's a story, I think, from Arthur Maxwell. I was growing up, I Can Sleep on Stormy Nights.
Oh, I know that story.
Yeah. Farmer was looking for a worker to help him. And he said, now, you know, you're normally there'll be regular hours, but sometimes there are emergencies when you'll have to get up in the night and make sure everything is all right. And all the kid would say was, I can sleep on stormy nights. See? Well, big storm came. The farmer had hired him. Big storm came, and he went to rouse the kid, so they go around and check things out, and he could not rouse him at all. In kind of bad spirits, he went out, and what he discovered, to his amazement, that everything was already battened down. Hay, barns, everything. And then he finally understood, I can sleep on stormy nights. And I think that's a wonderful depiction of what the life of the Christian should be. We ought to be ready at all times.
So I don't know if we have time to just mention this, but there is a tension in Matthew 24, 25 between the destruction of Jerusalem and the second coming. Is there an easy way to tease that out?
If you look at it from the standpoint of Matthew, Matthew is, of course, writing close to the time of the destruction of Jerusalem, and probably three decades after time of Jesus. What Christians have always said, that destruction of Jerusalem is a type of what's going to happen at the end of time. So
but
I don't
it is
know.
True that some of the words in these chapters apply more to the destruction of Jerusalem, and some of them project from that to the second
sure,
coming.
Sure, but you only know that after the destruction of Jerusalem.
Yeah, you go back
and we try to sort things out.
Yeah.
And I think all of that fits in well with the pattern of we don't really know when it's going to be, so that you have to be ready at any time. You know, there's one other quote which I think is helpful in that direction, too. It's one from Thomas Merton. Someone asked him about the Shakers. The Shakers turned out just wonderful furniture. In fact, Dave, you've got a strong attraction for Shaker furniture. Beautiful stuff. And someone asked him, with these people who believe the world was going to end, why and how could they produce such beautiful furniture? And the way Merton put it was, when you expect the world to end at any moment, you know there is no need to hurry. You take your time. You do your work well.
And you know that the Millerites, the William Miller's followers, built a brick building in downtown Boston within years of their stated day for Christ returning.
Uh-huh.
A brick building.
You have to prepare to occupy this world, and you have to be prepared to be here as long as the Lord desires. But if you're ready, then it really doesn't make it doesn't make that much difference, because when he comes, you know, we can sleep on stormy nights.
And readiness comes by trusting God consistently.
That's right. Yeah. I want to thank both of you for your contributions this quarter. It's been a delight to get together with colleagues and talk theology for hours on end, literally. I want to thank Dave Olson for our program engineer, for all of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.